Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me as always, Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back. It's Tier Buster time.
Paul, Tierbusters are on the tilt. This is probably one of, I would agree, our favorite episodes to start doing this series because, I mean, when you really think about it, this is when we start really trying to draw lines in the sand. This is when we start trying to separate, you know, a little bit of the constant vagaries that is the common talk on many podcasts and TV shows and things of that nature. I mean, we all had time to really dig into these prospects now. And it's time to start beginning to really put a framework about where they stand in our eyes and what we should expect from them.
Absolutely. And I think it was a couple years ago now, they pushed back the NFL Combine to be that early March period. And I truly do believe it allowed people like me and you to really enjoy this process because it allowed us to really dig in after the Senior Bowl and analyze these prospects further and go back and watch a lot more film and try to see, you know, more about these guys than before they get to the combine. So I think it worked out perfectly for people like us who evaluate these prospects, you know, and watch these guys, you know, and I truly do think it worked in our benefit and it gave us the time to do these Tier Buster shows prior to the combine. And I do really think it kind of lets us like say, okay, before we know athletic testing, before everyone finalizes their thoughts, you know, we've been talking about these guys since August, you know, and now we watch them again and we put our, you know, stake in the ground a little bit in guys that we really like. Obviously, the combine, you know, that athletic testing can move the needle a little bit in terms of tiebreakers and stuff like that. Or if somebody tests that really, you know, unexpected, then won't we soar. But it's a fun time. We're going to start with the quarterbacks tonight. It's a unique class. It's a different class than last year. You know, and that's what makes it a little bit different and fun to talk about. And I know you wanted to talk right at the top a little bit about, you know, just some of your own personal takes in terms of how you're interpreting the quarterback position a little bit differently now than maybe years past.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that one of the biggest things that I wanted to talk about, and it's really an open-ended question really to everybody out there. I mean, you know, we're not all just, you know, kind of idly passing by, assuming we know everything about how to evaluate every position. We're all kind of figuring it out as we go. We're all learning a little bit more and we're trying to grow in our understanding. So, Paul, this is equally just as much to you. The thought was like, you know, how did our process change this year? And I think for me,
with all the time that I've spent with, you know, movement science and skill acquisition and really digging into a lot of the great minds in that community in terms of their thoughts on how skill develops in athletes, you know, you really begin to take away really, I think, one big salient point, and that is that everything is connected. And when everything is connected, I mean the psychology, the biology, as well as the context of the game itself. And all of those elements are really mixed together in terms of the way a player expresses their skill. So when we're looking at the quarterback position, I looked at a lot of the traits that I kind of hold dear to me. And listen, I am in no way, you know, believing that I even had anything figured out to begin with. But what I am trying to do is look at where there might be ambiguities and even just double counting certain things as once. So for example, you know, we talked about things like arm strength, and I think arm strength is something that obviously you hear it used all the time, and I understand where it fits in terms of people's perception of the position. But I think that's where I wanted to begin. How do you look at the quarterback position this year? For me, as I really started to keep this kind of systemic idea in mind that everything is an open system, energy, feedback, information is constantly being exchanged between the offensive player, the quarterback in this case, and the defense. It's always flowing. And as a result, every player is looking to try to problem solve. So one thing that I really changed about my process this year, Paul, is I'm looking at these offensive players as problem solvers. So number one, big thing, problem solvers. How are they solving these problems? How are they using their physical capabilities in response to the problem at hand? But not only just their physical capabilities, but also what information is there out there for them to see, perceive, and listen to? So I think, and again, I don't mean to sound redundant with see and listen and perceive and all that, but I mean is there's information out there for these players to get sensitive to and to attune themselves to. So how is that changing in the quarterback position? And the big thing for me is I'm looking more at principles this year. I'm saying, what's the point of a quarterback on a football field? For me, the biggest principle is they have to get the ball moving down the field to score points. How do they do that? They distribute the football to their playmakers as a primary option. And then when in doubt, they try to make the actual play happen themselves, whether by scrambling or by moving off structure. But the key principle for them, I think, at the position is to move the football down the field, score points, get the ball to your playmakers and score points. That's their job. And how they do it may be pretty at times, may not be so pretty, but it doesn't matter because we should be thinking about what was the problem they were facing in that moment and how did they organize their movement and coordinate their movements to address that problem and answer that question, so to speak. So that's why I tried to stay away from things that I think were contextless, like arm strength. Outside, arm strength has no context to it. What I mean by that is when you say a guy has a strong arm, well, to me, strength is kind of like a temporal thing, right? At a certain time, players are stronger than in other moments of time. It's not like gym strength is the same as play strength. It's just not the same thing. Some of you are stronger in the moment on the field of play than you are in the gym. So what strength is more important? How much you bench press in the gym? Or is it how you access the strength and call upon that strength on the field of play to do what you need to do to solve the problem at hand? I think it's all context-based. So I think things like play speed, arm talent, anticipation, those things, those three elements that I just mentioned, I think all of those are great, great terms. Those three principles encompass a lot of the things we talk about: competitive toughness, accuracy, arm strength. All those things to me are subtraits of those traits. And I think that those three things, arm talent, anticipation, play speed, all of those can be assessed at different levels of the field and in different contexts. What's their play speed in the intermediate passing game? What's their anticipatory passing skills in the intermediate passing game? What's their arm talent like in the intermediate passing game as opposed to the short passing game, as opposed to the deep passing game? I think we're getting traits that just overlap too many times. So I tried to really reduce it down to really some context-based, skill-based traits that we all use and talk about and really try to isolate these evaluations. Paul, I'm sorry for the rant, but that's kind of where I went.
No, and listen, I think the days are long gone of looking at a quarterback prospect and saying he's tall, he's got a good frame, he's got good arm strength and velocity. Like, those days are gone. We have seen over the last couple of years, you know, it started, you know, probably 20 years ago or 15 years ago with like Drew Brees and then Russell Wilson. And we started to get rid of the size component as such a big factor. And last year, Baker Mayfield, you know, going first in the draft, you know, that started to become a little bit like, okay, don't just judge a quarterback based on his height and his frame. Then it became this, he doesn't play in a pro style offense. How does that translate? He only plays at a shotgun, in the air raid, in the spread. And now that's kind of gone by the wayside. So the evaluation of quarterbacks has been changing for a period of time now. And I think more now than ever, you are looking for those guys who basically, it seems so simplistic, but you're looking for those guys that can move the ball up and down the field and find ways to score points and put the offense in a position to score points and win the football game. And it used to be that if a player did that but didn't kind of fit the NFL's criteria, they were kind of shunned a little bit. And they were kind of, you know, looked at as they're not going to make it. You know, the Doug Flutie's of the world had to go play somewhere else for a while because of that. Charlie Ward once won a Heisman Trophy and had to go play in the NBA because back then the NFL wasn't ready for a player of his skill set and what he brought to the table, you know, even though he had won the Heisman Trophy at Florida State. So the times have changed. Yeah, it's great if you have an elite, you know, trait like arm strength or arm velocity, but that doesn't mean it translates to the game. I mean, look at last year. I mean, this is not to knock on him, but this is using as an example. Tanner Lee had great, great arm strength and arm velocity. You can make the case it was arguably the best in the class last year, not named Josh Allen. But Josh Allen utilized that trait, that skill, and he was able to harness it in the moment of a game and ability to throw, you know, on the run. And when the play breaks down off structure, he was able to call upon that elite arm talent, that velocity, that arm strength to make any tight window throw, to flick the wrist and throw it, you know, 65 yards down the field and make a play in the moment that you're talking about in the game. Not everybody can do that just because they have elite arm strength or elite arm velocity, you know, so you've encompassed it into arm talent in that play speed component, you know, and how they do in all different types of settings. And I think the times have changed in evaluating these. I don't think, you know, listen, are there still some thresholds that are looked at? Sure. But I don't think they're looked at anymore with the tight, you know, strict, you know, philosophy that it used to be. And I know there's going to be a guy we're going to talk about pretty early tonight who's really pushing the boundaries of what the NFL and the evaluation process and evaluators and scouts look for in terms of a quarterback meeting thresholds. And what do you do when they don't meet certain thresholds, you know, for size and frame and stuff like that? And I think it makes for a fascinating discussion about these prospects.
Yeah, and again, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I think that this discussion really does set the context for our own evaluations this year. Because you may see our draft evaluations and you may see our tiers, and to everybody listening out there, they may sound very much like somebody else's draft listings. But I really wanted us to talk a little bit about this to begin the show so people understand that we're taking a slightly different lens. And the reason maybe why we have somebody in a specific spot is just a different reasoning or a different philosophy. And I think that everything, I would say this to kind of close it out. I really believe players are problem solvers. And I keep putting that out there on Twitter, that player problem solver paradigm. I think that paradigm is the way we need to be looking at players. I do agree, Paul, there are thresholds, but I argue that I never ever argued actually that we didn't know the difference between terrible and elite. We always are going to know the difference between those guys. And I never argued that we wouldn't know the difference between great and average. What I argue is the money is made and the actual championships are won by differentiating between the players that are half a degree better than other players. It's when you get to that fourth round of a draft and you're an organization and you're trying to build a championship team. I think those choices are the choices that make the great franchises long lasting and great into the future. I think that's where you win as a dynasty or a team or an organization. And I think the time is to stop looking at everything out of context. We have to look at everything within context.
Yeah, I think it's so important, and it really does, you know, make you look at your approach and, you know, fine tune it, you know, and kind of cater your rankings and tiers to your approach, you know, and the philosophy that we're looking at here. And I think that is very critical for anybody who, you know, who does their own evaluations on these guys to look a little bit more, you know, at their own eval and take that into account when they're making the rankings and try to, you know, leave the noise, you know, on the outside, you know, in terms of what others think and how others may look at things, because there's a lot of people out there who have different opinions and different takes. Some people are much more, you know, number based and, you know, statistical based, and other people are very much, you know, athletic testing or metric based, you know, and then there's some people that are exclusively film and trait based. Like, you know, everyone has their own style that they bring to the table. So we just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that to kind of set up the stage for ours. So with that said, let's kind of transition to what our tiers look like at the quarterback position. If you already have purchased the premium notebooks, you will see the Saturday to Sunday football tier breakdowns for each position that describe, you know, what how we break down the quarterbacks, the running backs, the tight ends, and the wide receivers. Obviously, tonight it's just the quarterbacks. As we go through over the next couple of weeks, our tiers will also be updated in the rankings notebook as well. But for tonight, we're focusing on the quarterbacks. For us, tier one quarterbacks are guys that we think should be first round selections in the NFL draft, that we think we would take them, you know, in the first round and warrant that lofty praise. In terms of fantasy, we think they're round two dynasty rookie picks in one quarterback leagues, or round one dynasty rookie picks in super flex or two quarterback leagues. We consider them potential franchise quarterbacks who, you know, should be starting either immediately on day one, somewhere during the year of the first season, or without a doubt taking the reins and starting by the start of year two, you know, kind of like a Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith scenario. So that's kind of, you know, what our tier one looks like. So rather than kind of rattle off all the tiers, we kind of laid the groundwork there. That's what we consider tier one. Matt, who is in your tier one? And then I'll follow it up with my tier one and we'll talk about some of these guys.
Actually, my tier one is probably the same as yours, because I have a feeling that we're both kind of in the same place. But I have basically Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray in my tier one. And I think that there is a little bit of a difference between the two of them. I think if I, you know, push comes to shove, if I had to choose a player right now, thinking from that kind of player problem solver mentality, I'm taking Dwayne Haskins. And it goes back to what I talked to you about, Paul, in passing over the last couple of weeks as I was watching these players. I said, you know, when it comes right down to it, I watch Dwayne Haskins run his offense. I watch him create opportunities at the line of scrimmage, getting into the right play call, making sure the protection is sound so he has time to throw the football. I see him doing things at the line of scrimmage to create a platform to move the football down the field in ways that I don't see any of these other quarterbacks really, at least to my knowledge, any of these other quarterbacks necessarily really doing so. And I can see that visibly in just the way that he runs his offense. And then when I watch him post-snap, I see a player who really is on the brink of being able to attack all levels of the field. I think that when you watch him, he has a very, very good play speed in the short to intermediate areas. I think he struggles a little bit when it comes to play speed in terms of his arm talent and anticipation in the deep areas of the field. But what I love about it is that even though he struggles, by struggling, I mean, you know, his anticipatory skills in the deep area of the field are intact. I think he understands the actual kind of temporal or flow of his offense, and he knows when to unleash that football to optimize the receiver's ability to make yards after the catch, because that's been the biggest criticism of this entire class for me. I see a lot of atom throwers, and by atom, I don't mean the molecule. I actually mean atom. They throw at the receiver, and they really preclude the ability for the receiver to create yards after the catch. To me, that takes out the issue when we talked about earlier. I think that inhibits the offense's ability to move the football down the field and to score points. They're not facilitating those opportunities. That is, to me, principle number one of a quarterback's job. Facilitate opportunities for your playmakers to make plays after the catch. I see him doing that at a higher level than most of these other players.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you mentioned the two names, Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray, and they do make up my tier one as well. I think they're the only guys who I'd feel really comfortable, you know, pounding the table for in round one as guys that I think I can build an offense around that caters to their skill sets, and they can be those guys that you're talking about, guys that could produce points, lead an offense. I mean, you touched upon a lot of things Haskins does well. You know, I think he's the most complete prospect, you know, the size, the frame, you know, the arm talent, accuracy, you know, the ability to be that facilitator, you know, and distribute the ball to his playmakers like he did at Ohio State. I think there's still room to grow in him as well. I know some people are a little bit concerned maybe about, you know, vertical accuracy, pushing the ball vertically down the field, how he performs, you know, against pressure. I saw signs as the year went on of Dwayne Haskins really showing growth and development in those areas. And if you watch his last three games, you know, I believe it was Michigan, Northwestern, and then in the Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. If you watch those three games, you saw a lot of growth and development, I think, in Dwayne Haskins as a player. And you forget you forget very easily that, you know, he was a very limited experience in terms of just this year. I mean, I think he had played in one game or so the year before. So it was 1 year as the full-time starter. I think he's still got a lot of room to grow. I would support him, you know, as a guy who a franchise takes. Maybe he's not, you know, ideal start from day one. But, you know, listen, we know how it is in the NFL. These guys are going to start sooner rather than later. They all do, you know, but maybe it's week four for him or week eight or week six, you know, or maybe it's the rare case that he lands somewhere and they have a bounce back year, the team, and he stays, it's late in the year or the first thing, you know, first game of his second season. But I do think he's got a lot of potential and upside still to grow. And that's why he's my, you know, QB1 right now, the top of my tier one. And then Kyler Murray, we've talked a lot about over the last, you know, couple of weeks. So unique. You know, he's going to take all those thresholds and throw them out the window. And a lot of teams aren't going to even be willing to consider him. And then there's the whole baseball thing. So you got the baseball element, you got the size and frame element. But man, he just knows how to answer the bell, make plays, be that problem solver that you talk about. His ability to play off structure, his ability to keep his eyes downfield in the moment and make a big play. He has all the arm talent in the world to make every type of throw. He can throw from multiple platforms and arm angles. The biggest question for him is, does he want to commit to football? And that's going to determine whether or not he is a first-round pick, how high of a first-round pick, because while the size and frame might concern some teams, it's not going to concern every team. It doesn't concern me. I think you can alleviate some of those concerns by doing certain things, rolling him out, moving the launch point, a lot of shotgun. And I think he's still going to be very successful at the next level.
Well, I mean, I think the thing about Kyler Murray, and I think it's nice because I see things pretty much a lot of what you saw, but I see some things in some different lights. And I think it would just be interesting to share a couple of those things. With Kyler Murray, for one thing that I saw a little bit differently was I agree he has a lot of different ways to solve problems. The problem is that I see him solving similar behaving problems in the same way. And I don't know if you can recollect this, Paul, when you think back towards what you saw from him, but there were times where I saw him literally, when it was off structure and the play was collapsing, he seemed to make a conscious choice to use his legs to gain yards and to get the football down the field. Again, answering the primary principle and solving the problem and getting the ball downfield because that's what was afforded to him at that level, right? I question at the next level if those types of similarly behaving problems will exist for him and if it may put him in harm's way. And I wonder if he's going to have to change some of those things when he does go to the next level, which is the only reason why I have him a real half grade below a guy like Dwayne Haskins. I don't know if you saw that. Do you know what I'm alluding to? In the sense that there were times where when you did see the actual play completely break down for him, did you notice that he would always run or feel compelled to run? And obviously I know why. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying is there, or how do you reconcile the fact that that similarly behaving problem may not behave that way at the next level? What was your thoughts behind that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I do think we've seen athletic quarterbacks over the years who immediately took off at the first sign of trouble. You know, a guy like Lamar Jackson, who we were both fans of going in round one last year because of his unique skill set. But like, if we think back to Lamar Jackson, I think he looked for his first progression, his first read, and if it wasn't there, Lamar just took off. Because that was he always fell back on his greatest attribute, his greatest strength. I do think Kyler Murray, you know, looks to keep the play alive in the pocket as long as possible and uses that athleticism to move around, to buy some time. And yes, at the NFL level, defenses are going to be faster, schemes are going to be better, you know, the defenders are going to just be quicker, bigger, stronger. That sometimes how he won at the collegiate level, he's going to roll right into a sack, or he's going to take a big hit from the blind side. I do think that's possible. I do think, though, with Murray is that he did wait in a lot of instances. I think he did try to let the play develop and let his receivers create. And then when they didn't, I think that's when you saw him took off. And I do think he's going to do that at the NFL level, because where I think it might be a little different is at the collegiate level, he really could wait to the last possible second and then still make a play with his legs. In the NFL, with the level of athletes that he's going to be faced against, sometimes that's not going to work. So it's one of those things that I don't think it's as big of a concern for me as maybe it was for you or as what I had for Lamar Jackson. But I do agree with the fact that I'm not sure how he was able to always do that at the collegiate level, how that will translate, whether it's just keeping the play alive with his athleticism, you know, to buy time for his receivers, or taking off and making a play with his legs. Things will close up a little bit quicker. Things will, you know, the windows that were there won't ever open for his receivers, maybe against the coverage at the NFL level. And things will be a little bit quicker and faster paced in terms of him processing, you know, if he thinks he could wait for his receivers to make a play or just take off and make a run. And I do think one strength of his game is he doesn't seem to get hit flush too often at the college level. Similar to Russell Wilson, who never really seems to get hit flush. And I think that's important because we've seen guys like Robert Griffin just take a pounding sometimes in terms of his rushing, you know, and just exposing his body. At the college level, I think Murray did a good job with that. That's going to need to translate for him to survive at his size and at his frame. And so that's kind of my closing idea with Murray.
Yeah, and just as we transition to these guys and move on to the next tiers and everything, I agree with you. I think that it's going to really, that puts an exclamation point on making sure that the team that takes him is going to be using that athleticism and harnessing it. I don't think that offense really did that. I don't think they rolled the pocket for him. They didn't really move launch points for him. They didn't really allow him to use that athletic ability, like you said, that shortstop mentality of pitching the ball and throwing the ball from different arm angles. I don't think they really maximize that. So I'm really excited to see him at the next level. Paul, just as we go into the next thing and you name the next tier, just had a question right now, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray?
Give me Kyler Murray. I'm taking Kyler Murray just because the arm talent, the passing ability, I think is at a totally different level than Lamar.
100%.
Yeah. So let's take this to tier two. So tier two is prospects that we consider day two guys. So we're talking round two, round three in the NFL draft, you know, in terms of your fantasy spin, you know, we think in one quarterback leagues, these are like mid to late round dynasty rookie picks, you know, possible round two, round three dynasty rookie picks. If we're talking super flex or two quarterback leagues, we think this prospect has starter potential. And if he doesn't fulfill that potential, at least to be a high-end backup or spot starter, a player you can win with but potentially lacks consistency to do it for the long term if he ends up being that that high-end backup. In my tier two, is a little bit deep, actually, in this class. For me, my tier two starts with Drew Lock out of Missouri, who, listen, I readily admit he's going to go in round one of the real NFL draft. I think he's still more of an early round two prospect, you know, for his skill set, but he's going to go round one in the NFL draft. Will Greer out of West Virginia is next for me. Love Will Greer's ability to play off structure. I think, you know, listen, Senior Bowl wasn't an area for him to really shine in, and he didn't, but I still am not ready to throw away all the film that I've watched on this guy over the last couple years. Also in tier two for me is Daniel Jones out of Duke and Jared Stidham out of Auburn. Once upon a time, you know, Jared Stidham was going to, we very much so thought he was going to be a tier one guy. Auburn took a, you know, step back this year. Stidham's game took a step back this year, you know, showed some signs. He's got that natural arm talent, natural release, mechanics. You know, for Stidham, Senior Bowl was the first step. Has he looked at the combine, the pre-draft process? Still believe Stidham offers a lot of upside and potential. And then Daniel Jones out of Duke, he's another guy probably going to go round one. To me, he's a blend of Ryan Tannehill and Blake Bortles. He does some things well. He's got good size, good athleticism, can throw on the run. Great intangibles is what you hear. Great coaching under David Cutcliffe. You know, but to me, he doesn't, his ability to push the ball vertically down the field outside the numbers, sometimes, you know, the arm talent, I just don't think is there consistently enough. And I just have some questions about his accuracy at times too, especially when he's under pressure. He's got a lot of intriguing traits, but I think he's more of an intriguing day two pick than a guy who should be slam dunk in round one. So those are going to be the four guys for me, Matt, that make up my tier two. How many overlap with what you're looking at for your tier two?
Yeah, I mean, actually, we have pretty similar guys. I actually have Will Greer as my top guy at tier two. I think he's on the brink of being a tier one guy. I do like Drew Lock next. I like Daniel Jones after that. I followed up by Jarrett Stidham and Ryan Finley to close that out. I actually took Ryan Finley in this tier because I think if I stick to that strictest definition of, you know, could he be, you know, a high-end backup? I definitely think that's his floor. I can see him being a high-end backup in this league. So that's where we may differ a little bit. But I think he said a lot of great things. I'm actually maybe a little higher on Daniel Jones than maybe you are, but not that far from what you were saying. I think there is that player problem-solving mentality. I kind of look at him and I like the way he can solve problems in a lot of different ways. I think he can move on and off structure. He can extend the play inside and outside the pocket. I think he has the capacity to do that. The frequency with which he does that and the context with which he fails at it is definitely up for debate and kind of the reason why he is in this tier. But I think he has that rich toolbox to pull from. And I think that, as you said really eloquently, that's why he's going to be pulled early in this draft. So I agree with all those points on Daniel Jones. And I'm a big Jared Stidham fan, Paul. You know, I was burning the candle for him all the way through. I can't help but wonder if in terms of his problem solving skills, in terms of what he experienced at Auburn, just watching him solve the problems at hand, there were just a lot of times where his anticipation and his arm talent and his play speed were really just inadequate at all levels in particular games. And I think that that's my concern is, you know, does he just need a dramatic overhaul? But I do think out of tier two guys, he does have the highest ceiling of all those guys.
Yeah, I mean, and I thought your point about Daniel Jones was really spot on. And I think we see him pretty similarly. I think, you know, I agree with your assessment of him. And I also agree with what you said, the frequency at which we saw it is what leads me to think he should be more of a late round one to, you know, early round two pick. And I'd feel more comfortable in that regards than the top 10, top 12, top 15 love that he seems to be getting. And it sounds like that's where he's going to come off the board. I do think he offers a lot of intrigue. You know, like, you know, we constantly talk about the Giants and what they may or may not do, you know, in getting a quarterback. If you told me the Giants really liked Daniel Jones and they were going to take him at the top of the second round, or they were going to push into like one of the last picks of round one to get that 5th-year option because Daniel Jones was the guy that, you know, fit their criteria, 3-year starter, athletic, you know, good intangibles, a lot of experience, you know, I would say, okay, I can get aboard Daniel Jones late round one, or, you know, in the top 5 to 10 picks in round two. I just, for a guy who I, you know, when I put guys in the top 5 or top 10, I just kind of looking for a little bit more, either elite. I don't want to come across as, you know, hypocritical. Last year, I thought Josh Allen deserved to be there, but I thought Josh Allen had some unique, rare traits that were so unique. His athleticism for his size and his, you know, arm talent for his size were so rare and so special that the consistency was lacking, but I was okay saying he deserved to go top 10. Daniel Jones doesn't have any elite calling cards. He has a lot of good calling cards and good traits, but then he still lacks that consistency as well. So that's kind of like the difference, you know, because someone might be saying, well, you know, it sounds a lot different than what he was saying last year. And that's kind of me kind of like describing why there's a difference for me. I think Daniel Jones offers a lot of skill and a lot of traits that are on that good spectrum. You know, maybe even some of them are very good, but I don't see any elite traits out of Daniel Jones. And then because he didn't have that consistency, that frequency, like you mentioned, that would be why I still think he's more of a early round two guy than a guy who should be slam dunk, top 10, top 15, where it sure sounds like he's going to go.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I would just point out to everybody listening out there, all these evaluations go to trash the minute they're drafted, right? Because the minute there's draft capital associated with them, we immediately have framework for understanding how much of an opportunity these players are going to get on the field of play. And I think that's one thing to be aware of, because when you talked about Josh Allen, I think Josh Allen, we inherently knew the leash would be long with him. And I think we all knew he would be a first round pick. And I think that that's why when you have the opportunity to see those traits, like you said, they're rare, special. They transcend the idea of even context because they're just so there. He used them in games, though, Paul. See, that's the other thing. I'm just going to say that about Josh Allen. You're spot on with Josh Allen. It's not that Josh Allen is different than Daniel Jones and you know, in some ways you're being hypocritical. I think you're spot on. Josh Allen exhibited those rare traits within the flight and context of the game. There were times he was running full speed to his right and to his left and throwing 40 yards downfield. That's he threw it on a line. Daniel Jones isn't doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one guy we didn't really talk a lot about, Drew Lock. I mean, he's, you know, he's another guy who, you know, my stance on Drew Lock has changed a little bit since the beginning of the year, is that, you know, in my initial write up and profile in the Scouting Notebook, I talked about him as being a traditional pocket passer, and I had grave concerns about that in today's NFL, a guy who lacked mobility. But over the year, and it was Justin Higdon who first brought it to my attention, you know, and then you kind of soar a little bit at the Senior Bowl, you know, and now I'm looking forward to the combine, that Drew Lock's a much better athlete than I gave him credit for. And if you went back and watched his junior film, you saw it in Missouri that they never asked him to move the launch point, to make a play with his legs. He barely moved around, you know, off of his, you know, he took the snap, moved back, and he was like a statue in the pocket. And it really, you know, gave me some cause for concern when I watched him in the summer. Now, I think his arm talent is pretty special. I mean, his velocity and strength, while it's not on a Josh Allen level, it's not that far removed from it. He's easily in this draft class got the strongest arm in terms of velocity, in terms of arm strength. You know, there's some accuracy issues that there. There's some, you know, handling the pressure, you know, but he did show, when watching film from this year, he did show a little bit of that athleticism in game settings, which was different than when I watched his junior film. So when you combine that athleticism with the natural, you know, arm talent that I think at times he expresses, it makes his upside and appeal intriguing to NFL teams, where they'll kind of look past some of the accuracy concerns, you know, and some of that. And kind of this could be said about him and Daniel Jones in particular at Duke. There's a lot of people who say their surrounding cast especially Daniel Jones at Duke, kind of really set them back a little bit for maybe showing all that they could offer. And even Drew Locke, if you look at the games where maybe you would say Missouri was on a level playing field with their opponent or superior, you saw a whole lot different of a Drew Locke than when you saw them go up against some of the elite SEC teams, where it was really just not a contest in terms of line play in particular, and Missouri just looked overwhelmed. And I do think that's two things that the NFL landscape will take into consideration when they're evaluating those guys, and maybe that's why they're looked at, you know, as first round guys, because they're looking at what was surrounding them in college as well. So just a thought.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that what you're hinting at is exactly what I was hoping to kind of touch on in this episode at the beginning, which is you're talking about all the different elements that go into the way a player is going to be performing on the field of play. You're talking about all the other evidence that goes on. And I think all that can't be trivialized. It's something we have to try to capture. And I think that's exactly why I agree with you. Some of these players, especially like Drew Locke, I think that he's a guy that, yes, they could end up, you know, improving. Again, when you're watching these films and you're watching these traits out there, I think the best thing you could try to do is look for those similarly behaving problems, those problems that look like NFL problems, you know, the tight windows on slant routes and, you know, the outside the numbers, you know, down the field type of play, the time in the shotgun, how much time does he have to throw? You know, Kyler Murray had time where he had forever to throw, right? And then there were times where Drew Locke was running for his life. Do you know what I mean? So, like, these are things to just be aware of, because those problems may not exist at the NFL level. And the more we can evaluate the NFL problems at the college level, probably the better off our evaluations will be. And I think you pointed that out nicely.
Yeah. So let's take this to tier three. Now, tier three is round 4 through 6 in the NFL draft. So it encompasses most of day three. In terms of the fantasy spin on it, in one quarterback league, these guys are probably just watch list guys for your dynasty league. Probably not going to draft any of these guys. In super flex or two quarterback leagues, they're probably late round dynasty rookie picks. You know, put them on a taxi squad, put them at the bottom of your roster, because any quarterback that ever gets a chance to start is valuable in that format. So maybe you take some of these young guys with upside and just kind of sit on them and see what happens. In terms of who we think they are as quarterback prospects, we think they're developmental quarterbacks that may have a chance to start in a few years down the line, but most likely will develop into backup or third string quarterbacks. You know, so those are the guys being taken, you know, in this, you know, portion of the NFL draft. If you spin it to this year's class, you know, my tier three starts with a guy who is in, Matt, your tier two, and that's Ryan Finley. And he was real close. He is, you know, one of those guys that I'm sure we'll touch upon later, you know, who could make a tier jump up. I could easily see Ryan Finley, you know, being in my tier two before the draft comes. When I dig in, watch some more film on him, he's a guy who easily could sneak into round three, the back end of it, you know, for his traits. For me, his arm talent is what sets me back. I think he's very catered. While he has good size, he's very lengthy. He doesn't have, you know, that muscular frame that you would expect. And it translates to him not really having the arm talent that you might expect for a guy his size. I think he's very good in the short to intermediate range, but I think he struggles pushing the ball vertically down the field. But he's very good cerebral-wise. He's accurate in that short to intermediate. So I think, you know, for certain schemes, he could come in and be a spot starter or a high-end backup. Even if he goes in round 4, where I kind of have him right here, I do think he's got the upside to develop into a quality backup, a guy who could become a spot starter. I just kind of put him in my tier three because I went a little bit more with the round projection. And I could see him being a guy who comes off the board early on day three. But I wouldn't be stunned if he ends up being, you know, a round three guy, you know, because he fulfills that criteria that you were talking about, that at worst case, he becomes a high-end backup, and those guys are worth something at the NFL level. So he kind of starts my tier three. Gardner Minshew out of Washington State is next for me. But he reminds me a lot of a Case Keenum. You know, he he shows the ability to be a little bit of that gunslinger mentality. He's very good in the short to intermediate. I really like him on his ability to throw fades and back shoulder throws. I thought that was really good. He's got some sneaky athleticism in him. He's got a little bit of arrogance and confidence that I think is good for the quarterback position. I just heard a podcast with Jim Nagy on it, who said that he was really impressed with Minshew down at the Senior Bowl. He was kind of the leader of the quarterback group for his team. So I think he kind of just oozes that potential and upside in that regard. Tyree Jackson out of Buffalo, all the arm talent in the world to, you know, in terms of velocity and strength. But like Matt was saying, how does that translate to the moment and the context of the game? I have concerns about his release and delivery and how long it takes to set up. He might be one of those guys that's almost too tall, you know, and it might, his size might even be a deterrent rather than a positive, but he's intriguing. I think he's the definition of a developmental guy who needs some time. And then my tier three rounds out with Jordan Tamu out of Ole Miss, Brett Rippon out of Boise State, and Clayton Thorson out of Northwestern. From that group, Jordan Tamu is the guy who intrigues me the most. His ability to push the ball vertically down the field, his athleticism, very good accuracy in the short to intermediate range in terms of being that facilitator, similar to how he was at Ole Miss. Matt, what does your tier three look like? I'm assuming there's some overlaps here.
Yeah, actually, if I begin my tier where you actually went number two in your tier with Gardner Minshew out of Washington, I just really like the way he executes his offense. I like the way he commands the field. I think that's evident on tape, even without sound. You could see how he runs his offense. And I think, as you pointed out really, really well, Paul, I think it's that touch and that arm talent that you see from him. There's that temporal thing going on with him, right? I think there's that temporal element that he displays in his passing that I think is really good. I think in a class where we talk about the deep passing game really being at a premium, I don't know how many of these guys are ready to be in like a vertical passing game right now. They may have the arm strength to do it, but we all know that a lot of the defenses and the coverages out there, especially the coveted quarters coverage that everybody plays, is all about throwing really low percentage passes. And where are those passes? Outside the numbers and over the shoulders to wide receivers. There's not that many guys in this class that I think can do that with any consistency. But I think, like you said, the back shoulder fade screams off the film of what he can do. And I think that that's something for sure where I think that he has that potential to attack vertically where some of these guys really don't yet. And I kind of really liked him for that. I think he's a player that I think when you really break him down, I think he has the skill in terms of problem solving to be a really effective quarterback. After that is my crush. I mean, listen, he's probably my crush at the position. And we talk about how situations really didn't favor players. Jordan Tamu had everything on offense you could ask for, right? I mean, he really did. I mean, he had a great wide receiver in DK Metcalf, who's likely going to go number one in terms of wide receivers. That seems to be where everything is going. AJ Brown, everything seems like it's going that AJ Brown's going to be up there early as well, right? Knox at tight end, easily going to be a player that could end up catapulting himself into that first, second round conversation. So he really wasn't like behooving of any weapons. He had the weapons, but if you watch the line play, man, he didn't have time to throw at all. And to think that that doesn't really affect you, it affects you tremendously. Even with these outstanding receivers, there were times where he had less than 2 seconds to throw. And that's a quick passing game at times. And I thought that when you saw Tamu, I thought there were a lot of times where he made some bad decisions and he showed some poor accuracy. But then there were times he was just on fire, where he was just really connected to the moment, perceiving and acting with the defense on time, able to do it fluidly. He showed the touch in the short to intermediate game. And you know what, Paul? He had a pretty decent deep ball at times too. I mean, he really did. It wasn't always great. It didn't always land, but neither did Dwayne Haskins. You know what I mean? But I saw that temporal element to his game where he would throw it as the receiver would be coming open as opposed to after they came open, which is why I have a guy like Tyree Jackson in there after Tamu. Actually, excuse me, I have Jake Browning after there. That's going to be probably different than us, but I'll talk about him in 1 second. But Tyree Jackson is very much the epitome, as you said, of that Adam thrower, right? He's throwing at the player after they're open, just before they get out of the break. And I know people are going to say, isn't he Paxton Lynch? No, he's not Paxton Lynch. I think Paxton Lynch, honestly, you know, you look at Paxton Lynch's film out of Kentucky, out of Memphis, excuse me. You got it. I got to be honest with you. Don't part of me wonders if there was like a little bit of a raw deal there. Like he just ended up in a spot that didn't really use him that well in the NFL. I mean, he had more than enough chances. That's why I say, you know, hey, let, you know, it is what it is. But he really looked like a different player than Tyree Jackson. So I think all the Paxton Lynch stuff, they looked different. They really did look different in the way they played their game. Paul, I'm going to go with the Jake Browning discussion for a moment and just kind of share my couple of quick notes on Jake Browning. I think Jake Browning is the epitome of the backup quarterback that'll fill out a depth chart. I really do. I know people are going to be like, they're like, Jake Browning, Jesus, really? Yes. There were just times in that offense in Washington on deep go passes and even passes to the flats where he looked solid. He really looked confident in what he was doing. His arm talent overall, I thought, was pretty solid, at least functional to the NFL level. He was able to match appropriately the route with the type of trajectory of the football. He was able to do that. His mechanics are solid. You know, his play speed is solid. You know, his accuracy in the short to intermediate areas on digs and drags and outs, I thought, again, was functional and solid for the NFL level. And I think on his deep outs and comebacks, I think he was solid at the NFL level. Really, the biggest thing for him, I think, was he really didn't really show too much ability to extend the play. I felt like he was really heavy-footed inside the pocket. I felt like he was easily distracted outside and really had difficulty really showing that poise that you want to see extending the play outside the pocket. And as a result, I think he really suffered on anticipatory throws in general when he had to extend the play. And I do think that that's something that is going to relegate him to that backup status. But I think, again, if you're looking at him as a depth quarterback, I can see him hanging around in this tier. And to finish out my tiers, Paul, this particular tier, I do have Brett Rypien and Clayton Thorson to finish it out.
Yeah, I mean, and a couple things there. Rypien is a guy who some in the draft Twitter community are really high on, much higher than me, who think he could be a top 100 pick. You know, I think the NFL, you know, is not at that level with him. You know, Jim Nagy did a great job using the NFL intel to get people at the Senior Bowl who NFL teams wanted to see. Rypien was not one of those 8 or 9 guys. It was originally 9 who were asked to be at the Senior Bowl. He was down at the Shrine Game. Listen, I think he's solid across the board. I think, you know, this year, I think he maybe improved his arm talent a little bit more in terms of velocity and strength, solid accuracy, good touch, good anticipation. But, you know, they're like average to above average. There's nothing in Rypien's, you know, skill level and traits that is really good to very good or very good to great. I mean, it's mostly average, above average. Maybe a few things are on the good spectrum, you know, and I think he just profiles as a solid, you know, potential backup quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think Rypien is more of that 6th round type prospect. I think the guy that intrigues me the most is I don't know if I'm missing something, and I feel like it's going to really, you know, make me go back and watch even more than I have, is that, you know, again, I keep mentioning Jim Nagy because he did such a good job at the Senior Bowl. You know, Clayton Thorson was supposed to be down there at the Senior Bowl, and I kind of wish he didn't get injured and was able to participate down there, because Jim Nagy said that he talked to every single, you know, NFL team, and every single NFL team, no one had him lower than a 3rd-round grade. So I don't know if he was just kind of, you know, pumping up, you know, Clayton Thorson, who was supposed to be down there and couldn't be. But I don't, you know, I know there was some buzz about Thorson before the season started. To me, he's got the frame and the size that you would ideally look for, but he doesn't have that, you know, upper echelon arm talent that you would think would maybe accompany that. You know, I think it's probably above average to solid or above average to good. You know, he doesn't have much athleticism. It's probably average at best. You know, his decision making was an issue there at Northwestern. His turnovers were an issue there. So I don't know if I'm missing something. There are people who believe that he did, you know, a lot with very little at Northwestern. You know, so maybe that they're taking that into consideration a little bit more, and I'm just, you know, looking at what I saw on film. But he's the guy that probably, intrigues me the most, as I'm not sure if I'm missing something that's there based on when I heard, you know, that statement that most NFL teams look at him as no worse than a third round pick, because I look at him as more of like a round five, round six guy. And hearing third round, it, to me, is significant in terms of, you know, maybe how I saw him. So I think he's the guy who I'm really intrigued to see a little bit here over in the pre-draft process, maybe get some more film on and watch him and see if I'm missing something on Thorson.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can really think of when I was watching Thorson, outside of, like you said, those physical traits, which I think there definitely still is a strong undercurrent that really regards those traits of height and weight really well. There's still a lot of people in that particular church. I do think that the biggest thing for him was, I think his mechanics, I just think he looked the part. I think he looked the part more than anything else. I really had trouble with his overall play speed and his decision-making. I didn't see him, like we talked about, in context. I didn't see that kind of poise that you would want to see under pressure. I didn't really see him executing at a very high level. I see him where there were elements to his game that were good. I thought there were problem-solving capabilities that he has there that makes him a really solid backup. But when you actually break it down and you look at his accuracy to all levels of the field, it really wasn't consistent. You know, again, a lot of the game has matured into this quick passing game, a lot of quick passing game. RPOs are really a replacement in many ways for a quick passing game. You know, in an offense that I run, you know, I use RPOs as my quick passing game. And that's exactly the way the mechanics of the quarterback is used for that particular area of the field. So instead of throwing slants like a la West Coast style, you know, you couple a slant with a bubble screen and now all of a sudden you've got an RPO. You know, and you're faking play side zone run, and you have the, you know, number two receiver bubbling out while the number one receiver is slanting, and you're reading that outside linebacker that's apex between them, and you're saying, okay, well, if he sinks on the bubble, you know, I'll hit him behind the ear hole on the slant. If he, you know, kind of fades out a little bit, I'll hand it off to my running back. If he kind of sits back on the slant, I'll hit the bubble. Those are quick passing game elements. And when you watch Clayton Thorson and you watch that offense, I really do think that he was fine in those areas of the field, but I didn't get that from every area of the field. I thought his accuracy was lacking in a lot of places.
Yeah. I skipped right over that too. His accuracy is probably, you know, the point of the element of his game that is most concerning in terms of translating to the next level. So let's take this to the final tier for the quarterbacks, and that's tier four. These are late round or UDFA selections, so probably round seven, priority free agents, undrafted guys. We think they're practice squad or third string quarterbacks most likely. This is also where we would put guys that we would potentially have limited exposures to, you know, so if that comes up, if there's guys, you know, that maybe come out of the woodworks from smaller level schools over the next couple months that there's just not a lot of film on, we like to at least put them in our tiers, in our rankings, but acknowledge that we've had limited exposures to them. So for my final tier, the guys in it for me are Easton Stick at North Dakota State. We saw him down at the Shrine Game, really had some struggles, you know, really productive collegiate player, you know, good in the short to intermediate range, got some athleticism to him. Obviously, I think people maybe were expecting a little bit more coming at North Dakota State, where we saw Carson Wentz be so successful from. And Stick didn't really live up to that. A lot of people thought he should have been at the Senior Bowl, but from his performance down at the Shrine Game, from all the reports, were really struggled down there. So I think he's more of a late round guy or UDFA. Jake Browning for me is in this fourth tier as well. Matt talked a little bit about him.
I hate you. You're so wrong. Okay. Listen, you want to worry about Clayton Thorson? You got to go watch Jake Browning again. Okay. No, I'm just playing with you, but terrible.
I mean, listen, Jake Browning, what I saw was a guy that
was
when
it
he
Husky
lost
enough for you, Paul, he wasn't a Washington Husky enough for you. What's the issue, dude?
What I saw with Jake Browning is I saw a guy who, when he had the big time playmakers on the outside, he looked like a lot better quarterback. You know, when he had, you know, Pettis on the outside, when he had John Ross, you know, he seemed to be a guy that really his statistics and his production was really a product of his surroundings. And when those guys, you know, moved on to the NFL and, you know, the skill players around him weren't at the level of creating mismatches that those two were regularly doing, I just didn't see Browning kind of elevate his game there. It would be my biggest concern. Right with Jake Browning is also Trace McSorley. I think McSorley might be in for a little bit of a position switch, similar to like a Taysom Hill at New Orleans. Use that athleticism to his advantage. Another guy who I could see potentially switching positions is Nick Fitzgerald out of Mississippi State. He's probably the guy out of all these guys on this list that I think took the biggest step back and disappointed me the most. I really thought that he had an opportunity to grow and develop into potentially a tier two or tier three player when the year started, because he does have really good athleticism, you know, to be a Cam Newton or Tim Tebow like runner. He's got the arm talent to, I should say, he's got the arm strength and velocity to make NFL pros. But like Matt's been talking so perfectly tonight, in the context of the game setting, he can't utilize that strength and velocity to make plays with his arm. He just doesn't have the capacity to do it. His accuracy is really poor. So his overall arm talent is just leaves a lot to be desired, even though he physically has that strength and velocity to make those throws. In the context of a game setting, he just rarely was able to do that. And he just didn't show the growth and development that I thought maybe he was going to this year. Kyle Shermer, Pat Shermer's son out of Vanderbilt, really productive career there at Vanderbilt. Interested to see if he generates a little bit of buzz, you know, coach's son. You know, we've seen that before, grew up around the game. Probably very good on the whiteboard, the intangible stuff. Taylor Cornelius out of Oklahoma State, we saw him down at the Shrine Game. Intriguing arm talent, a little bit of athleticism as well to his game, but very raw, needs to refine, improve accuracy, playing off structure. Marcus McMarion out of Fresno State, more of a dual threat athletic type, could see him sticking on a practice squad, the scout team with his athleticism. And then David Blau out of Purdue. I talked about the guys who intrigued me the most, probably Fitzgerald, McSorley. I think those guys could be position switchers. Shermer, due to the connection to, you know, a head coach in the NFL. And then obviously Easton Stick was the Shrine Game. Did the Shrine Game match what his potential was, or was it just a bad week? Because I don't know if it was representative of what I saw on film. I think he looked a little bit better on film, but the Shrine Game, reading the reports, watching the game, he just didn't really look like a big-time prospect that should be a guy who's going in like round three or round four, where I think some people might have thought he should have been penciled in. So, Matt, anybody, you know, I'm assuming most of the names are pretty similar. Is there, you know, if you want to rattle them off, you can, or is there one or two that maybe intrigued you that you just want to talk about that?
No, I mean, other than the order and kind of sitting in that same pocket of world that you live in, I do think that McSorley and Fitzgerald and Stick and Shermer are probably the most intriguing out of this entire group. I think McSorley as a position change is an interesting notion. Same thing with Fitzgerald as a position change. But again, I can also see those guys, like you said, and this was the exact thing I thought of with Fitzgerald, and I guess you can apply this to McSorley as well. But I have McSorley leading the pack because I do think there's a world where McSorley could find his way in the NFL as a depth or backup quarterback. I think he is. I mean, he did it in big games. You know, he really did do it in big games at Penn State. And, I think we'll all agree that, Saquon Barkley is certainly well understood of his own craft as a running back in the game of the football, even though he's so young. And, you know, he always gives McSorley a vote of confidence, obviously because they were teammates, but I wouldn't discount the fact that playing alongside of him too, that says something about him as a complete player in terms of his preparation, in terms of the way he approaches the game, and all those things are great locker room and organizational things to have. So McSorley, I don't think McSorley is jumping his way up into tier two, but I could see McSorley working his way into the next tier. He may jump up. It depends on what he does at his pro days and his everything of that nature. So McSorley could be primed for a move up. I don't think he's, has to be a position change, but I think as a position change too, it's one of the reasons why I have him as one of the most interesting players. Totally. I think his quarterback abilities are better than people think. But I do think the position change element makes him a very dynamic asset to a team. Same thing with Fitzgerald. I mean, Taysom Hill was a great call by you. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this quarterback class as a whole, it doesn't lack the lacks the star power of last year when we had five. I mean, listen, we may have four going round one, and last year we basically had four, and then Lamar Jackson snuck in there, you know, at the last pick of, you know, round one. So the numbers may be the same. I think there's more question marks this year about these guys. You know, I will say this though. I do think the day two range has more intrigue this year than last year. I think Will Greer, Jared Stidham, I think those guys, you know, offer a little bit more intrigue. I won't say Drew Lock and Daniel Jones, because I think when push comes to shove, they're going to be round one guys. But I do think, you know, Will Greer and Jared Stidham leaves open the intrigue a little bit for day two, as teams maybe look to day two. Now, you can say that that's pretty similar to what we thought last year with Kyle Laletta and Mason Rudolph. You know, Mason Rudolph went in round three, Laletta went to, you know, the top of round four. So I guess those two guys had some intrigue as well. I just think maybe Stidham and Greer intrigue me in their skill sets more than a guy like Mason Rudolph did last year and Kyle Laletta did. So I think that's why, you know, I'm a little bit more intrigued with those guys coming off the board on day two. And I do think the round one guys, it's fascinating because of the Kyler Murray situation. You know, he's such a unique eval, you know, and then you have Dwayne Haskins on top of it, limited experience, you know, a lot of upside there. And then you have Drew Lock and Daniel Jones, who the NFL might look at differently than maybe some people like me and you do. In terms of, we maybe are holding their lack of frequency or their inconsistency a little bit against them, but maybe the starve that is finding NFL franchise quarterbacks is making the NFL world and evaluators look a little bit past that to try to hope that they can harness that skill. So it's fun. I don't see or anticipate much movement in my tiers. Do you kind of agree with that? I mean, listen, could Drew Lock, for me, he'd probably be the one guy I would say maybe he can make a move up and maybe he joined Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray in my tier one, you know, but he might be the only one. Maybe Ryan Finley slightly jumps up from the top of my tier three into the bottom part of my tier two. I think those are a couple guys that could potentially move. I'm not anticipating anything substantial in my movement at the quarterback position. I think at times you can see some more substantial movement in the other positions, because I do think the athletic testing could sometimes, you know, break ties, move guys up and down a little bit more, make you reevaluate somebody, make you go back and rewatch the film and look at something closer again that maybe you missed in terms of their athleticism. But I don't really think at the quarterback position, too much of what we're going to see at the combine, the pro days, and the pre-draft, the rest of the pre-draft process is really going to move the needle too much for me. Are you kind of on the same level with me in regards to that?
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with our current position. You know, our vantage point is from, you know, a seat at our houses watching film on YouTube. You know what I mean? And I think that this is the best we can do. It's a very vacuous situation. We don't have a team that we're building. We're not actually in command of a depth chart or a roster. So the type of quarterback that fits us, we really don't have that granularity of need. So this is us going into the film and saying, hey, you know, who do we really think is the most adaptive mover? Who's the best problem solver? And I think these tiers, really, we're saying is they're all similar level of problem solvers within their respective tiers. And I think that that's where I would caution people, you know, when you look at our tiers, or at least when you look at my tiers and you think about this perspective that we're trying to adopt here, this player problem solver kind of paradigm, assume that the tiers are really exactly what they are. They're a bucket. They're a bucket of players that are in there all together. There is some differential between each of the players, and that's why one is ahead of the other. But in all honesty, they all have similar toolboxes in terms of the depth and breadth of ability that they have to address NFL problems, as at least we've seen on their film, or at least I've been able to see on their film. I think as time goes on, there are a lot more of these guys that I had There were extra films that I could have watched that I have not had time to watch. I'd like to watch some more of some of these players. So I can see them really juggling within their tier, Paul. But I think outside of the guys that are at the top or the very bottom of each tier, I don't imagine there's going to be a lot of movement where suddenly we're going to see Jarrett Stidham go into the, you know, the first tier. I just don't see that happening. I think tier one is pretty much locked down. I don't see Will Grier, as much as I like Will Grier, I don't see him going into that next tier. I don't see Drew Locke going into that next tier. So I'm right there with you, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun. These shows always are so informative, you know, make me think about, you know, as I hear you talk about these guys, it makes me think about my process, so we learn from each other. It's a fun experience. It's a fun time to try to lay out these tiers, you know, so early in the pre-draft process, you know, and then obviously, you know, make adjustments, alter as we need, as we go, as we watch more film, as we, you know, get the whole picture and add in there, you know, their metrics, their athletic testing as well. So again, if you like the work that Matt and I are doing, please get over to the website, SaturdaySundayFootball.com. Click on the premium content tab. Purchase the notebooks for $9.99. You get access to four notebooks. You get the scouting notebook. We have now completely separated it into 2019, you know, draft, you know, so there's a tier for the 2019 quarterbacks, the running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. You still could get access to all the other draft eligible guys that didn't declare as well. Full scouting reports on almost about 100 players in that. We're still adding, updating more to that as well. We'll continue to do that over the next couple of weeks and then make edits along the way in the pre-draft months as well. You also get our rankings notebook, which will have our draft eligible rankings based on our film analysis. It'll have our tiers that we're talking about here that we will continue to update. Right now you're getting our version, but we will continue to make updates to that over the next couple months. You get our Devy rankings. You get our Dynasty rookie rankings right after the draft as well. And I'm still updating my Dynasty rookie rankings last year, so you can see my take on last year's rookie class as they go into their first offseason and, you know, look into being sophomores or second year players at the NFL. You know, what I think about those guys as well. Those rankings are up as well. In sometime in March, you get the freshman notebook, which will be scouting reports on many of the top incoming freshmen, and then the draft projections notebook in April. You get all four for $9.99. It is the best way to support the Matt and I and what we're doing here, and to continue to help us grow and reach a wider audience and continue to do what we're doing here as well. If you can't purchase the notebooks, please get on whatever provider you listen to, whatever platform, rate, review, and subscribe. A quick reminder that we are doing some transitional stuff behind the scenes here in terms of servers, websites. So bear with us if there's any issues in terms of, you know, your podcast host, you know, uploading the newest or downloading the newest podcast and showing up. Keep an eye out on my Twitter handle, Matt's Twitter handle, and the Saturday Sunday Twitter handle as well for any updates in that regards as well. Matt, any final parting shots here?
No, really enjoy the ride. I know we're enjoying it as well. And again, just keep that mind open. And I think this is what makes the game fun, is when we start kind of questioning ourselves and questioning what we're doing a little bit more deeply. I think we really get to a really fun new perspective on how to view the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.